This is my first time on the show. I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
That's right. And by the way, I know you only have 20, 30 minutes. So, yeah. So we'll only have you for, you're like a rental. Like you're like a touch rental. We have to
I'm
get
happy
you
to
back.
Be here.
Yeah. Thank you. Actually, you were on once.
Oh, I was on. I was on. Yeah. It was quite a while ago, but yes, I was.
It was a while. And David, you've been on, I think, 20 times.
Well, a few, definitely. But yes, it's always great to make a little pitch into Criterion Now there, kind of connect with folks on a different level from my other podcasting ventures and just, you know, talk the straight shit here, see what's going on in the world of Criterion fandom and all that. So here I am.
I could talk about my flash sale haul. I do have that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's probably a pretty good launching pad.
Yeah, I got lucky. So in addition to some of the flash sales, I didn't actually go that crazy this time. I, from the official actual flash sale, I bought the second volume of the Scorsese World Cinema box set. I bought the new Elevator to the Gallows Blu-ray, and I bought the upgraded War Trilogy. But I noticed around like the same day that there were quite a few incredibly good deals on Amazon for films as well. So for even less than 50%.
Well,
so I bought
Amazon's.
I think Amazon's aware of the flash sale and the Barnes & Noble sale. And I think they position their prices a lot of times around it, which is very savvy on
them.
Well,
it's interesting. I got my Silence of the Lambs from Walmart, and I got Night of the Living Dead from Amazon. So those two were kind of, you know, kneecapped as far as Criterion's flash sale was concerned. But I had a few. I had Kamerad Schaft and I, Daniel Blake in the Elevators to the Gallows Blu-ray upgrade there. So those were the three that I needed to kind of top things off. And so I'm
Remain once again complete.
Yes.
Yeah. For another week, as Keith always says.
Great way to start the show. I got the Monterey Pop, and I pretty much cursed myself as I did that because I'm like, what am I going to do with the other one? I hate myself for doing this. And I got I, Daniel Blake. But anyway, we're on Criterion Now 47, and as you could tell, we have Arik Devens and David Blakesley. We have Arik for a short time, and David, you're with me for the duration.
I'll drag this out for hours and hours if I have.
And what people don't know is, and you might, and that's fine, but what people don't know is, speaking of hours and hours, we've already recorded a show on the Winter Olympics together, so this is a twofer. So we're going to do a little bit of an abbreviated show this time, and again, as I mentioned, Arik's going to be leaving us soon. So we're going to eliminate the short takes and the Filmstruck discussion. Although, Arik, I might try to get your take on Filmstruck just because you're in the industry. But real quick, before we get into the May releases, I just want to give a couple quick shout-outs to our Patreon contributors. So I did 10 last time, but this time I realized I can only do so many per show. So I'm just going to do 5 this time. One is Michael Hutchins, and I think we all know Michael. He is pretty much, even though he's not been on the show, I think he's a major part of all of our shows and really the cornerstone of our community. Really love Michael and all he does and all the info he brings. We also have Nick Evert, who I don't know as well, but he has been involved in our community and groups. Seems like a nice guy. And we have our Aussie friend, Tim Lego, who I was actually pretty proud of this. When he contributed to mine, he decided to contribute to a number of others. So so I'm glad that we were the impetus for that. And Tim's a great guy and very much into home media. Let's see. And then we have Dean Estes, who is also part of the group. So probably a lot of these names are familiar to you guys.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear these
in fact,
familiar
Dean,
names.
Dean called out your radio voice, David. So you want to give Dean a little radio?
Dean Estes, this is tribute. David Blakesley coming at you on Criterion Now.
That's great. You can make that your ringtone. And then we had Andre Sousa, who is also involved with the groups. We're Facebook friends. I know he's a nice guy, and we interact some. I think actually that's one thing that our real life in the community is kind of interwoven. I think I'm Facebook friends with a lot of these people. But anyway, thank you guys for contributing. And these were all at the $5 level. So that's going very well. So anyway, we had May 15th this week. Or sorry, May 15th. That would be amazing. We had February 15th. And the releases were a little later in the day than usual. And you guys, I don't think you've heard it, but Mark and I did a short reaction thread.
I saw the post, but I haven't listened in yet. But it looks like you kind of just had a spur of the moment, hey, what's going on type of thing. So, yeah, interesting.
Well, what we did is we purposely closed out all of social media and email, and we did look to see what the releases were to just make sure they happened, but we did kind of like just quick takes, quick reactions. So actually it might show we sometimes don't know our shit, because we're just unveiling them as we talk to each other. And so they made a few misstatements, but yeah, it was a fun quick reaction, and I always like talking to Mark, and we're going to do that every month from here on out, as long as people will have us. But anyway, we'll get into the releases if you guys are ready.
Yeah. Let's go for it.
And I'm going to go a little quicker just because I want to get as much Arik.
much appreciated.
I want to get as much juice from the lemon as I can get. So May 8th, we have Frank Borzage, Moonrise. This is a 1948. I actually don't have my tabs open, but...
Yep, 1948. You're
getting
correct.
Them open.
Yep. 1948. Yep.
1948. So I went on our quick take, I said he was an emigre, but actually he was not. He was like a, under today's world, he might be like a dreamer. His family moved here when he was very young, and so he was American. But he was a journeyman director and did some good work. But I think Moonrise is seen as like maybe a lesser movie, as far as, you know, not an A picture, maybe a B picture.
This was Moonrise before it was a kingdom. Is this like a prequel type of thing? Or...
I don't know. So have either of you guys seen Moonrise? Or,
no, it looks like we've got the second greatest a Ferris wheel scene in cinematic history, though, from the little preview clip on Criterion. That's some guy who's kind of having a freak out anxiety attack or something inside a Ferris wheel, and he kind of jumps out onto the rails as the thing is still spinning.
I remember that scene.
So
that's
yeah
great.
So obviously the third man has the greatest Ferris wheel scene in all cinema, but here's a pretty worthy runner up there. Yeah, but
Ethel
I don't
Barrymore joins the collection.
Okay.
Yeah. Who does?
Ethel Barrymore, yes. Part of the.
Oh, Ethel, another Barrymore, right?
Another Barrymore, yep.
I haven't counted how many we have so far.
Sister of John.
Drew, is she in there yet? If not, there's hope.
There's definitely.
Or maybe
hope.
Not.
There's always hope.
Now, is this the first official disc released by Criterion of a Borzage movie?
I believe
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's interesting because this is his last film, and usually they start off with the early stuff. Although
he made a lot of films, he may go back
to the silent era even, perhaps. But yeah, I'm intrigued by the cover art, this kind of reverse silhouette of a noose. Yeah, it definitely is. It seems pretty intriguing. I read one knock that's kind of a widely available public domain film at the end of the guy's career, but this looks like it's a new restoration. And I'm definitely intrigued. And also the other... You know, put down as that it's a little bit lacking in special features. It's kind of a film only with an interview piece. I'm not going to be too concerned about that. Sometimes films don't really need all those supplements to stand on their own. But it's an intriguing entry point into a pretty well known, highly regarded director.
He does go back to the silent era, by the way. His first film was 1915's The Pitch O'Chance.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was an actor before he was a director, too.
Yeah, all the way back in 1913.
That's interesting, yeah. So, yeah, good point, David, that this one has gotten a little bit of hate, and I think deservedly for the lack of features. Now, maybe that one feature is going to be pretty substantial, but yeah, usually when they're this thin, the price point is lower, and I think there's been some grief about that. Some people actually just don't like the film, whereas others champion the film as one of the greatest films of all time. And I'll get to our little poll. It does show up in the poll.
Well, that's a range of opinions, isn't it?
I know. Well, imagine that. Have you seen this?
No, I have not, but I'm looking forward to it. More films from the 40s make me happy.
Yeah, that 48
like classic Hollywood.
Post-war kind of American Reconstruction. To me, I've only had good experiences from films from that era that Criterion has chosen to release, so I feel like this is probably going to hold up just fine.
And I've seen this and I liked it, and I don't remember it as well. You just jogged my memory with the Ferris wheel scene. I do remember that scene, So I think my memory is this is a pretty good film, but I didn't, maybe because it didn't have the reputation, it didn't have that wacky C, I didn't give it my full attention, but I remember being surprised by how good it was, whereas I thought it was maybe a lesser film. So, well, speaking of hope, we have The Other Side of Hope on May 15th by Aki Kaurismäki, I believe is how you say it. Is that right?
Good enough. It was Aki, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, Aki.
I said it wrong on
Aki Kaurismäki, but I'm not sure.
Quick take, yeah. And Hutchins corrected me in the Patreon. So either way, if I'm wrong, I'll definitely hear about it.
Not a Finnish expert by any means.
Not many of us are. But this is one of many films from Kaurismäki in the collection. I've yet to see it. It's just actually hasn't come to theaters here locally. It's coming next month. Have you guys seen it?
No, I haven't. I saw Le Havre, and I look at the description of this, and it's like, does Kaurismäki have a immigrant trilogy or something like that in the works? Because both Le Havre and this film, you know, speak with or focus on individuals migrating into Europe from, you know, developing nations. And you know, there's a Proletariat trilogy in the Eclipse series. I'm very eager to check this out. So, yeah, that's probably my most anticipated release just because I really want to see the film. And like you, Aaron, it has not shown locally or else I'd have been there. But, yeah, very eager to check out and see what he has to say about this issue. This is about a Syrian immigrant. And obviously it pretty much touches on very timely cultural issues that a lot of us are aware of nowadays.
I also have not gotten to see it, but I'm also extremely excited. I love his films, and Le Havre is especially a highlight for me. And so to have him kind of be, like David said, back in that kind of realm again is really, really exciting to me.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the European directors that has the rubber stamp from Criterion. And I think, you know, if they can get it, everything of his will come out on Criterion. Although I don't know how many more films he'll make. I guess he's getting up there in age. I think his early works are a lot more radical and a lot more interesting. And they do, I think, kind of engage that immigrant experience. Sometimes not just the immigrant experience, but just kind of like the isolated from society experience.
Yeah, displaced.
The Proletariat trilogy especially, and they're a little more subtle. I think they've gotten a little more comedic as he's and a little more quirky as he's actually he's always been pretty quirky, but I'm always looking forward to another Kaurismäki. And then the next two on the 22nd of May are kind of a good pair. They are Christian Mungiu's Beyond the Hills and Graduation. I think the most notable thing here, and speaking of Criterion getting a little hate, is people are wondering where is 4 years, 3 months, and or I'm sorry, 4 years, 3 weeks, and 3 months, no, 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. I can't remember. So I wouldn't suppose anybody I'm talking to has any knowledge about what's the deal.
Well, okay, maybe? let me kind of go back in time a little bit. Back in August of 2017, I happened to be in New York City, and I've mentioned my, you know, now somewhat famous visit to the Criterion offices. And in the course of our conversation, I was asking Mr. Peter Becker about, you know, the challenges of restoring films. While I was there, I saw restoration work in progress being done on Young Mr. Lincoln and Tom Jones. Of course, those have both been announced, and one's out and one's on the way very soon. But, you know, I talked about, you know, probably those old films are the most challenges. And he went on about some of the newer films that have been made that also have their own problematic history and elements. And he mentioned this one in particular, the was a 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. I think did I nail that one? So anyways, but he did in that sometimes these directors, they're making films, they're doing it not exactly on the fly, but under extremely tight deadlines. I think he mentioned this one as winning some awards at Cannes, and once that film had won its award, even though the director himself said, I still want to do some more work on it, there's still a few changes I want to make, but you know, he kind of submitted it as is, as a work in progress. Once it wins the awards, the studio's like, hey, this is good. there's nothing more that needs to be done. But some of the elements themselves are not in the condition that would make for an optimal presentation on home video. So, you know, the hate that you referenced earlier is just that, why don't we get the Manju box set? Why don't we get the film that's been sort of teased at and anticipated for literally years now? And of course, we all know about Trevor's kind of sharp-eyed squint right. into a behind-the-scenes photo there.
Or should we say thank you, Trevor?
Right, right, right. Yeah, for getting our hopes up there. Well, this is the other side of hope, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, literally. Hey,
guys, listen, the time has now come, sadly. I just wanted to say very quickly that I'm really excited for Mishima, but I think it's crazy that they didn't put Patriotism on the disc. Given that they did not also upgrade that. And yeah. It just seems like with Bergman Island and Beale's Grey Garden, that they kind of missed an opportunity there. And I just am shocked by that. But I'm really excited for all the films this month. It's a phenomenal month.
Seven films, yeah.
Yeah, really. And two upgrades. I mean, just crazy. But yeah, so unfortunately, I got to run. But I really appreciate it. And thank you so much, Aaron, for letting me briefly sit in.
16 minutes and 36 seconds. Yeah. Thanks, Eric.
Awesome. Connecting with you, Eric.
We'll have you back when we're not doing a twofer.
Sounds good. All right.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Good luck this week. Take you.
So, yeah. All right, that's my little Christian anecdote Munju. On the Munju releases.
And you're allowed to share that, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think at this point, you know, Peter's not going to put me on do not, you know, contact list anymore. I sat on some things pretty well. And again, this is just, you know, the situation that they often run into is that just because the film had a recent release, just because you saw it on what looked like a pretty good transfer on the big screen, doesn't always mean that it's ready for home video. So that was just a very fascinating conversation to be a part of. And, you know, I was hoping that, and I certainly do hope that they continue to do the work that needs to be done to get that film out. I thought maybe they would. We even talked about it in our New Year's wacky drawing deciphering that maybe this was a hint at a box set, but apparently not.
Yeah, that's been a topic, and that's actually a great point. So I've had some inside info about a release that was beloved when it came out, but it was anticipated for a while, but it was delayed. I know for a year. I'm not going to say which one. It was delayed because the elements weren't there.
Right.
So I guess if you want to complain, and not that we're going to talk sense into all the complainers about Criterion, but I guess the question is, do you want a poor condition copy now, or do you want to wait and let Criterion and have faith in Criterion that they're going to find the right film, the right supplements, the right package, and be patient for it? So I think that 4 months, et cetera, will come someday. Mm-hmm. At least I'm hopeful. And actually, that same point about the restoration and maintaining things, and then, you know, and actually the whole can piece, we kind of talked to Sean about that, and he gave a lot of insight. Sean Baker, when he was talking about how he managed his films, and you have to be super diligent to maintain your own filmography. And I'm not knocking Christian Munju. I have no idea what the situation is, but it's almost unthinkable, but even with modern films, they're not always like, you can't always just plug them into disc and they're going to look pristine. So I have faith in them. But anyway, we do have two.
Yeah, yeah.
So Beyond the Hills and Graduation, and I've seen Graduation, and I think it's good. I have not seen Beyond the Hills. I've been waiting because that's another one that's been on the rumor horizon for probably a good few years now, I think. I think ever since... he was a newsletter clue, or not a newsletter clue, but a Phantom Page. I think people speculated that or 4 months. But have you seen either of these films or Romanian New Wave?
I have not. I mean, it's obviously the Romanian New Wave is a thing that seems to need, deserve, even require representation. So I think in that sense, these films are... And not necessarily overdue, but the time is right to get them out there. So I'm very eager to check it out. I mean, I really have enjoyed the different contacts I've had with Eastern European cinema, whether it's the Czech New Wave of the late 1960s, you know, the Polish films of the 50s, 60s, 70s, even into Kieslowski's work. And, you know, it's just a really unique part of the world. There's just all these kind of cultural and political tensions that are at play here. And, you know, Romania, I don't really know much about the society other than they've had some pretty dark history in recent decades, a society emerging from a lot of oppression. And I'm very eager to see maybe how their experience speaks to some of the things that we're going through as a society these days.
Well, I've seen a good many of the films from the movement. Not, of course, not all of them. Maybe a dozen or so. Since that history changed, there have been a few bumps in the road. Things are not perfect, although I don't know if things are perfect anywhere. But they certainly have a ways to go in Romania. And so I think these are more in like the neorealistic style, and sometimes they're not altogether pleasant. So one of my favorite films, actually probably my favorite Romanian New Wave film, is The Death of Mr. Lazarescu.
Yeah, another one I've heard a lot about.
Without spoiling, the title says it's about a death, and that reflects in a way about society. So I think it's a really ripe movement for Criterion treatment. So I'm glad that these two films are getting that treatment. Again, Graduation's not my favorite, but it is still pretty good. And actually, that approaches the same subject from a different class perspective too. So I think you will enjoy that. One thing that Mark and I observed, especially with The Other Side of Hope and these two films, is they both had Cannes footage from supplements. Mm-hmm. So we wondered if that was intentional, because Cannes Film Festival is in May. Maybe, do you think they might put out three films that are were played at Cannes as a tribute to
Well,
Cannes?
I track the chronological release dates of all the Criterion films, and you know, there's just a lot of Criterion-worthy films that come out in May of every year, going back the last decade, 20, 30
That's
years
true.
Or so. So Cannes has become a complete pipeline of future Criterion releases, and I haven't done the statistics, but I would imagine you could probably almost go back for the last several years, if not decade or more, and say 2, 3, 4, 5 films from each year's Cannes lineup find their way into Criterion eventually. And of course that goes way back to the 50s and 60s, even with some of the classic art house, you know, tentpole releases. So, but you know, for Criterion to say, what are some of the more contemporary directors, the people who are still creating new work that we want to get into our, you know, our collection, our library, Cannes is a great place to start. It just has the right sensibility, an international appeal, a commitment to artistic innovation, and telling stories that are, you know, compelling and powerful and speak to our contemporary situation. So, yeah, I can definitely see the connections there.
Well, it'll be a while till you get to these on your podcast.
Yeah,
you might be talking about these again in 20 years.
Well, yeah, we'll find our way to get them into the queue there.
So the next one, which Arik already mentioned, is Mishima: A Life in Four Chapters, from Paul Schrader. So we've known this was coming. Well, I shouldn't say we've known this was coming. We knew that the restoration was out there. I think 2-3 years ago is when we first heard about it. And it first played a few theaters. I think, if I remember, it played like Tokyo and San Francisco, maybe a few others. And I think actually even back then, and this is one of those film festival, Paul Schrader said it's going to be come back to Criterion, and told somebody in the audience, and they told Reddit or Criterion Forum. And so it's that news has been spread. But it's taken a while. But I love this film. I agree with, I haven't seen Patriotism, but I agree with Arik that's a missed opportunity. And for those that don't know, that's a film, I think it's based on a workbook by Mishima.
Well, Mishima was the director, actually. It's the only film, I think the only, it's not even a feature film. It's like 30 minutes. It's incredibly powerful, though. Maybe the reason they didn't combine the releases is that Patriotism itself comes with its own book. It's like a kind of a short story novella or something like that that Mishima wrote, and it's a nice package. It's one of these little DVD slipcase things. So they Patriotism and Mishima were released simultaneously by Criterion. How was it back in 09, 10, 11, something like that? Maybe even earlier than that. But you know, they are kind of a pairing of films, but you know, to put them all into one release, you'd either have to have like a mini box set, or Mishima would have to be reduced to sort of just a supplement. And even though it's not a long film, the package itself is really nice, and it is an unbelievably unforgettable but extremely heavy film. So you know, yeah,
knowing Mishima, that I'm not surprised at the depth. Or but speaking of large packages,
yeah,
probably should choose my words a little more carefully. Speaking of packaging, so the Mishima DVD has a gorgeous package.
One of the very nicest as far as a single cover. Release. Yeah. Yeah, this kind of gold foil, psychedelic coloring, slipcase. It's deluxe. You know, again, just a really kind of back in Criterion's golden age of packaging, which is a little bit more hit or miss. I mean, we just talked about the Olympics, which is just, you know, fantastic, right. You know, unprecedented in some ways. But in, you know, but then some of the other packages sometimes leave a little bit to be desired. La Dolce Vita stands out as one that was a little disappointing. Even The Night of the Living Dead, very beautiful slipcase, but it's got this stupid fold-out poster inside. It was like, but anyways,
nothing's perfect.
I'm hoping that they keep all the nice bells and whistles on the Mishima package, because it would be a shame to, for the Blu-ray only fans to have to take a bit of a downgrade there.
Yeah, they kept the cover, and it looks like most of the supplements are the same. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything new. Mm-hmm. The only thing now with Blu-ray is they might not need both discs.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a one disc package.
It is a one disc, actually. So that might mean if it's a one disc Scanavo, I might be a little disappointed just because I own the DVD it just looks nice on the shelf. So if it's just a regular spine that looks like all the others,
I would have to think that packaging will move some extra product. Just a little quick footnote: I'm actually going to see Paul Schrader in person this coming week. He's going to be in a kind of a conference film festival type thing in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He and I graduated from the same college, Calvin College, here in GR. So I'll be not that we met or anything like that, but it'll be kind of cool to see him in town. And I wonder if he'll have any comments about an upcoming Criterion Collection release.
Well, I hope you'll ask him. We talked. Of course, the Grand Rapids connection is very prevalent in Hardcore, movie.
Yes.
Which is a good movie. Came out on Twilight Time, so not on Criterion. But I think he's actually. I think he doesn't get as much credit as a filmmaker. I think he gets more credit as a writer. And I think Mishima, in our circle, I think a lot of people have seen it, but I think just in his oeuvre, it's underappreciated. Not that I think the Criterion was going to change that with a Blu-ray upgrade, but if you're on the fence, I would recommend you seek it out. It is gorgeous. It's a biopic. But if you're bored of Oscar biopics, don't be scared away. This one has a lot of its own flavor, and Mishima himself was quite a transfixing individual. Quite a story, and is transfixing a word?
Yeah, it is, and he really is. He's just a unique, one of a kind personality. Very complex character. Not somebody that probably most listeners can personally identify with or fully cheer on, but he's a genius with some pretty remarkable character flaws, obsessions, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and actually, if you haven't seen Mishima and you don't know his story, don't look it up, because it's a good blending of art and politics, and it ends up in a place that is actually quite compelling. So even though this is an art film and it's gorgeous, the color, the set design is lovely. It, like, the second half is a kind of a thriller in a way too. So I won't say any more lest I give it away. I'm glad that upgrade's finally coming. It's going to be an expensive May for my wallet. So then the next one is May 29th. This little movie you may have heard about. It's called, it's not Il Sorpasso. It is called Midnight Cowboy. When I mentioned that I just kind of glanced at the release titles on Wednesday or Thursday, this was my WTF one.
Like, yeah, they're
you got to be kidding
really
me! Is
did
this
it.
A joke?
Yeah, they really did
they
it.
They really
yeah.
did it. So of course you know this has been a joke. I think the joke originated at Criterion Forum, and then has kind of made its way to all social media and all Criterion circles. But there was a clue, I think maybe 3-4 years ago, would you say, that looked like Ratso from the movie, and he had a cold compress thing on his head,
thermometer sticking out of his mouth. Right, yeah.
So everybody saw it and they thought, and if you've seen the movie, you understand Ratso does get a little ill. I thought, okay, well, he's a rat. That's
a sick rat.
That's Midnight
right,
Cowboy.
Exactly.
And so, of course, time passes. It doesn't happen. And then a year or two later, we got a release from an Italian release of Il Sorpasso.
The Il Sorpasso.
Right. So retroactively, people... I use that wordplay for ill sore possum, and it's become a joke. And I think the joke is that
so warped,
how ludicrous,
and weird, and involuted upon itself. Yeah,
yeah. The joke is that it's like the craziest clue ever. But I think the consensus was that was the meaning of the clue, ill sore possum. And I don't know if that's people reading a little too much. Now I think that we know Midnight Cowboy's out. And our previous discussion about Elements, you know, that might have been it. But
Cowboy was a Criterion Collection Laserdisc release. I actually talked about it with Robert Taylor, I think, in episode 2 of the Criterion Reflections podcast. So, and it's the kind of film that completely fits into Criterion's general groove. You know, I mean, if they can release The Graduate, they should release Midnight Cowboy. Both early kind of breakthrough roles for Dustin Hoffman, but you know, Midnight Cowboy, I mean, it's not exactly New Hollywood. I mean, Schlesinger, the director, was British, but it kind of came out of that same mentality, that same kind of new approach to let's tell it like it is, you know, let's get raw and down and dirty and all that. And of course, it's legendary as the only X-rated movie to win the Best Picture Academy Award. So there's a lot of interesting things going for it. John Voight, a pretty spectacular performance as well. And just a lot of really cool bits, a little Andy Warhol overlap influence. And it's just a cool film from a particular place and time, and should be a pretty excellent release.
And on our quick reaction, I called it American New Wave,
yeah.
And I forgetting that Schlesinger was not American, but it really feels like American New Wave, even with the filmmaking style. There, a lot of the editing, I think, it really feels part of
that.
Oh,
yeah,
movie.
There's that little freak out on the subway sequence there. Yeah, just right. All kinds of trademark bits from that era of filmmaking.
Really good movie. I think people, if you haven't seen it, I think people are in for a treat. Just curious your thoughts on the cover, the concentric circles.
Yeah,
it's
kind of a little bit of a Peter Max, you know, hippie type thing. I mean, the bright fluorescent colors, I'm glad they didn't just go with the standard, you know, two shot, you know, of the actor side by side, even though that's an iconic poster and portrait and would have been a serviceable cover. I'm glad that they did something original with it. You know, just again, it kind of captures that kind of psychedelic flamboyance of the era. So yeah, I'm looking for, I mean, I don't know if it'll be a digipack or what, but it's, I mean, I put that poster up on my wall for sure.
Yeah, I think the last time we spoke, well, aside from today in the Olympics, was about Clue Googler,
yeah.
And a day with the boys,
right.
And I think like the little Kaleidoscope is very much in sync with that that film, which was, of course, that was a short film, but you know, very much a product of its time. So, and the font is, I'm usually pretty good at typography, but I don't recognize this font offhand. It's probably not one that's used so much. I think it might be the Warner Brothers font.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to do a little research on that. It seems like there's something kind of like that in your Microsoft Word dropdown, but it's certainly nothing you're going to use on a, you know, business letterhead,
right, yeah.
Or anything like that.
Don't use this on your resume. it kind of has that old 70s paperback feel. So yeah, but I love it though. It's you don't need Helvetica or whatever, you know,
right.
Or Myriad Pro XL or whatever, or MM, I guess.
Yeah.
So Midnight Cowboy is coming out. So take that, Ilse or Opossum. Yeah. And then the last one is, I know, I'm glad I have you here,
sure.
Because I know you're a big Brasson
fan. Oh, yeah,
So another upgrade. We had two in 1 month. Hazard Balthazar, yeah. And please set me straight on how to pronounce that.
That'll do, yeah. That's fine. Hazard Balthazar is how I would say it. But, you know, 3 years earlier, 1966 film, but at the other end of the spectrum in terms of aesthetics are concerned. If you compare yeah. one cover to the other, and Bresson's very pared down, not minimalistic in a kind of an abstract expressionism way, but very, you know, very austere and yet full of emotion and compassion, not even just for mm-hmm. the life of the young girl, but the donkey and just life in general. It's a wonderful film, one that is, you know, highly praised and actually I think even sometimes excessively praised because well, I don't know. I have a somewhat complex relationship with this particular film. I do like Bresson quite a bit. He's incredibly thought-provoking, and mm-hmm. his attention to detail, he is the auteur of auteurs as far as I'm concerned. I don't think there's another director, and of course there's other directors I love more, perhaps, I could say it this way, than Bresson, but I don't think there's another director who takes complete control over every aspect of production more than Bresson does. And so whenever you're watching a Bresson film, you are watching the expression of a singular mind who has a unique gift of getting everybody to do things his way. And so
I think to the umpteenth degree,
exactly.
Even the actors, you know, they give their own performance, but that's really Bresson. I mean, if you notice the similarities among acting in his films, that's because, and Criterion and other releases have talked about that, and we're not even getting into hands.
right
we know
right.
that he likes hands in his movies. Yet I have a confession. I love Bresson as well, but this is one that I see it as beautifully tedious.
Yeah.
However, this is, I had the DVD, mm-hmm. and this is one of my early collection mm-hmm. films, and I haven't seen it since I first put that DVD in. So it is slower, it is challenging, even for Bresson work. I mean, it's about a donkey.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. It's like you can, the film kind of lends itself over to extreme hype to the point where novice viewers are going to maybe be, you know, overinflated expectations or feeling a little bit underwhelmed at the end of it all if they've read, you know, the Roger Eberts and others who just, you know, gush with emotion of just how devastating this film is. And it's like, well, don't necessarily go in expecting that. It's unique and it's provocative. It's you know, thought provoking in a certain,
it's challenging.
Exactly.
In a good way.
Yeah, my wife and I had a chance to see a Bresson double feature at the Film Forum in our trip to New York. Last summer, we saw Diary of a Country Priest and Hazard Balthazar. Oh, boy, that was not a heavy... that was not exactly the ideal date night, but it was a unique experience to say that.
I bet. But,
So, again, overdue for a Blu-ray upgrade. You know, there's been some other... Bresson's obviously, and I think they'll probably do as much of the catalog as they have access to in Blu-ray as time goes on. This is one that's, you know, it was pretty much inevitable that this one should get the HD upgrade, and I don't know if they've done anything different with it. I haven't really checked out the supplements. Looks like the covers.
It looks like the same. I'm glad that the cover's the same. I think if they're going to leave a cover alone, this is one to leave alone. I think that image kind of punctuates the film,
it
the girl
the
and the donkey.
It, right. And it's a beautiful image, right?
Yeah, it is. So I'm looking forward to that. So seven films in May. So Criterion Now is going to be a little packed in May. Well, I'd say it was a good release month. One of the slights, of course, there's always slights, but not as many features, supplements, and a lot of the supplements that we had from discs like Midnight Cowboy were ported from other discs, so not a lot of new supplements.
But there's a lot of volume here. I mean, it's like, you know, they, you know, they're and sure. There's a lot of work that goes into these films. Again, there's one last reference to my trip to New York is just, and the visit to their office is like, you know, don't take any of these films for granted. Even the restoration on a film like That's Moonrise, right. where there's not a whole lot of extras, there is a pile of sweat and dedication that goes into making these films. I mean, I get to see some of these folks doing the very tedious frame by frame cleaning up of every little speck. It is a very laborious, time intensive process. And a lot of times those margins of financial profit are very minimal compared to the work that went into it. So it's a lot of labors of love and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, and we are in a golden age of film restoration. So enjoy it while it lasts. So anyway, we have a couple polls that we do in the group that I'll just kind of share. One is which one the community is most excited about, and I think no surprise, Midnight Cowboy wasn't a runaway, but it was a soundly in first. And then the second one was a surprise to me, a pleasant surprise, was Mishima: A Life in Four Chapters.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
And then after that was Balthazar. Mm-hmm. So, and then...
Oh, I went with Other Side of Hope just because it's the one that I'm the most curious to see that I haven't already seen. But I'm definitely super eager and pleased that those other upgrades are happening, you know. And I'll count Midnight Cowboy as an upgrade as well since it was a earlier Laserdisc release. So we basically got three, you know, pretty, you know, knock them out of the park titles. They will all do very, you know, brisk business, I'm sure. And then the Manju and Korosmaki and even the Moonrise is kind of that kind of out of left field there. A very, very solid month. So I'm pretty pumped for what May has in store.
Me too. And I actually voted for Beyond the Hills for the same reason, just because that's one I haven't seen that I'm looking forward to the most. And that one didn't get many votes at all. And same with Graduation. So not a lot of excitement for Manju, but I do recommend people check it out. Not a ton either for Karasmaki and a little bit for Moonrise. But I think the Moonrise, I guess the people that like Moonrise really, really like Moonrise and speak very highly of it. And then we also had our predictions, and for seven films to come out in 1 month, we did pretty terribly. I will defend the community in that I think the last couple prediction threads have had some Manju films, so I think people were waiting and they just got tired of it. But the Other Side of Hope was the only one in like the top voter getters that people got. That one was third. And then I'm just scrolling down. Yeah, pretty much everybody struck out. that's the only one on the in the list that made it. But the top vote getter was Tree of Life, and then Bull Durham. Of course, that was a newsletter clue.
They're gonna probably let that one Notorious. Sit and marinate for a little bit longer. Maybe a June or July movie when baseball season's in full swing or something like that.
I think the Boys of Summer, I think that's a great time for it. So, and also Notorious, Derzu Asala, Lost Highway, which might be a little bit of wishful thinking or, you know, hopeful thinking, although it makes sense. True Stories, Grand Budapest Hotel. I think we still have to wait a little bit for Grand Budapest Hotel. And there's others. There's Bowling for Columbine, Columbus. A lot of variety in this month.
Yeah. The new Wes Anderson's what, just a couple weeks away or sooner for some people. Isle of Dogs.
Isle of Dogs.
So maybe they'll try to link those up a little bit. I don't know, but cool.
I've already shared this theory, but my theory is that Wes Anderson needs to get beyond Isle of Dogs to focus on Grand Budapest for the Criterion to get the time. And I don't know his next project.
That makes a lot of sense, and I think I'm sure he's extremely swamped with new release stuff and. He doesn't want to just kind of commission it to say, oh, you people go handle that. You know, he'll want to put that package together when the time is right.
And I'll also share that something I learned when I visited Criterion is that he's up there a lot. And I think he does like to, and I don't work with him, so I can't really speak from experience, but my impression is that he likes to be heavily involved in the releases. So especially Grand Budapest, which is probably his most highly acclaimed and award. I think it won some awards. I know it was nominated for a ton, and it was in the running for a lot of awards. It did win. Did it win an Oscar?
I don't know that it won an Oscar actually, but you know he definitely is getting that kind of industry regard. I mean, now that he's not the hot up-and-coming talent, you know, I think they're recognizing he's got a pretty substantial body of work, pretty strong following. I don't know enough about Isle of Dogs to really make any predictions, but I'm not sure that that's an exactly what you call an Oscar bait type of movie, unless they call it animation or something like that, and maybe he'd be up in a award in that category. But yeah,
I think that's a good chance of that. By the way, 4 Oscars for Grand
Did they
Budapest,
win
so
or they, yeah, they yeah, won. Won. Was, 4 Oscars. Okay, well, yeah. I'm out of the loop on that one as well. Okay.
I think I was in the loop. I just forgot. Costume design, hairstyle, music,
okay,
which
sure.
I love that he won that. And then production design. So
I must not have watched the Oscars. Sense. Did he actually walk up and accept any of those awards, or was that other people?
I know it was only 3 years ago, sure. But I don't remember. I think it was other people. Yeah. I think if it had been writing or something, he would have. I think he was rumored to get the Oscar for writing, but it didn't happen.
Okay.
So anyway, that's the new releases or the new announcements for May. We just had Night of the Living Dead and Silence of the Lambs come out on flash sale day, which was very convenient. I got mine from Amazon at the low price of $18 a piece, which was pretty awesome. I already watched Silence of the Lambs, actually, today. And then this week we have The Hero coming out and An Actor's Revenge, Kaunit Ichikawa and Satyajit Ray. And then we have Tom Jones coming out next week, and I know you saw the restoration, as you already indicated, at Criterion.
Yeah, there's a little transitional scene there, just a couple stills that kind of got, you know, one scene fading into another. That was the piece that I got to see, right?
So based on those stills, are you given your vote of...
I know Tom Jones has a pretty mixed bag reputation, to put it nicely, you know, but I think I'll enjoy it. It's a romp. It's a period drama. It seems like one that my wife and I can probably watch as a bit of, fluff entertainment with a little bit of a twist in historic context. I mean, it's an Oscar winner and all that. So I'm suitably pleased with these upcoming releases. More Ichikawa and Ray is definitely a good thing, and those both seem a little bit off the beaten track from what I've seen of their work before. So yeah, nice expansion into some new territory for each of those directors.
I love that you made the distinction of what you can watch with your wife.
Oh, yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm in the same boat. I can watch Tom Jones with my wife. Although I think she's seen it and she didn't like it, but if she hadn't seen it, that I probably could have. I'm not going to get her to watch The Hero or An Actress Revenge.
Right, there's just something.
Those will be a bachelor.
Exactly,
evening.
It's her book club night. Okay, that's when I pop this one in, you know, that type of thing.
And so, not to take things down a notch, but and I'm not going to dive into Silence of the Lambs, because I think we're going to talk about that on next week's episode. But I did watch Silence of the Lambs today, and in fact, I just finished it probably about 30 minutes before the show. And, you know, this is a rewatch I've seen numerous times. As in Doug speak, I've seen it 20 times. And we also had the school shooting this week.
Right.
So it was really tough to watch that today and watch a movie about a serial killer, a thrilling and well-done movie about a serial killer, and that you are oddly fascinated by. And thinking about today, you know, the headlines are not serial killers. They are school shooters. But you don't see many movies about school shooters these days. I mean, well, there's Elephant, and there's that other one about Columbine. But yeah, that I think... So
yeah, well...
It still does tap into a sense of dread, but...
Bowling for Columbine is kind of out there on the fringes as a potential Criterion release from the New Year's drawing and all that. You're right. I mean, even Night of the Living Dead, you know, the hordes of killer zombies, you know, I mean, zombie entertainment is kind of... It's blown up into its whole unique thing, but just this pervasive sense
that's
of
just people
death and dread, you know. Yeah, go ahead, finish your thought there. But yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. The zombies, though, are still relevant, because that's just people walking around with their phones today.
well, that's, I mean, just this this anxiety about random senseless violence, that just because I might happen to be standing in the wrong place at the wrong time, some maniac will just come and extinguish my life without any moment for me to prepare or transition or to say my last goodbyes. But it could be over in an instant, because, you know, random lurking death is right around the corner. I mean, that's just a incredibly heavy thought, especially for a society that isn't, like, physically at war. We're not in any kind of a at least not currently, in a civil war type situation or where we're facing some hostile power. We don't even necessarily, a lot of us don't live in crime, you know, infested neighborhoods or communities, but one mm-hmm. person with a weapon can just go in and just completely devastate and change the script for everything we've been saving for, planning for, or our children, the aspirations of what we want our kids to grow up into and what they what we want them to experience. I mean, that's just a monumental horror show that is just infesting yeah. so much of American life at this very moment. And these films, you know, I mean, there's the pleasures, if you will, about thrills and chills and scary jump scenes and getting into the mind of this fiendish monster. But boy, at a palpable level, there's some really dark realities that a lot of people are, it's not just a hypothetical thing. I mean, there's people in Florida who are really living this right now, and people who know other people.
It's terrible. Right, yeah. Right. And it's part of the national conversation too. And usually we actually stay away from that. Yeah. And I don't want to go too deep into that rabbit hole. But the thing is, our entertainment nowadays, and really just the idea of a horror film, the villain of a horror film, I think that the reality right now is too hardcore for and too truly horrific for us to really just face. And and so, but really nowadays the. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the gun stuff, but just because there are guns that can capable of taking down a lot of people, that's really the serial killer. Mm-hmm. You know, if the person that's going to do it all at once,
they do their serial killing in 5 or 6 minutes, you know.
Exactly.
Right.
So I guess entertainment wise and, you know, back to Silence of the Lambs, you can't really. There's really not the back and forth with a character and catching them. I'm sure you, at some point, there probably will be some films about situations like this, or maybe there will be a film about the coach that the hero. I could see that being a film. The guy that got in the way of the bullets for the students. So, anyway, that's enough talking about tragedy. Yeah. It's a tough week on that front. So we'll get into some more uplifting Criterion news stuff.
Sure.
So one part of the new releases is Scanners is coming out on March 27th on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. So I think that
one more dual format kind of out of the catalog now, right?
Yeah. I think that was a digipack. That's probably going to be a Scanavo and separate DVD releases, I'm guessing. So if you own Scanners, it's going to be an endangered species.
Well, for some people, I guess that's a good development. There are those people who like everything to be kind of matched and identical. I'm very happy to own the complete edition there.
Me too. We also had a closet video this week, and those are always fun. It was Lee Unkrich, who is recently the celebrated director of Coco, which did win an Oscar. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it did. I'm not going to look it up this time. Sorry. Not even for Patreon users. But he also, I know he's worked on some of the Toy Stories and Nemo and some other Pixars. So his perspective is interesting. But one thing I noticed, speaking of Blu-ray, I noticed he kept on grabbing DVDs. And I don't know if that's just because the packaging is bigger, and maybe that's just a misperception on my part. But it does feel weird when filmmakers, even if they're animated filmmakers, look for the low def. Does that hit your your sensitive spot?
Yeah, well,
at all?
I'll certainly say I have not watched the closet video there, so I can't so much comment on that. But it does surprise me that if you're an industry professional, a filmmaker, or a person who's even involved, not even as a director, but just in the production, wouldn't you just sort of naturally want to have the best quality? Yeah, duplication and distribution of the product. And so, you know, DVD cases are a little bit larger. I don't know. But to me, it seems very puzzling as to why anybody who's that directly connected to the entertainment industry would go for the DVDs.
Yeah, well, there were some he grabbed that were not on Blu-ray.
That's obviously a limited option there.
But the Blu-rays with the director's seal, those were the ones that are on Blu-ray he grabbed. And then I forget which film he grabbed a dual format. And I was like, oh, good thing that's a dual format because it has the right.
Yeah, but
it made me feel
better.
But,
you know, I mean, I know maybe even some of our own listeners are still DVD, you know, purists, and they like the idea of having everything at the same matching height and the ease of convenience. I mean, I was a dual format, supporter because I liked the idea of having a DVD that I could get easy screen caps from, whereas Blu-ray, it's a little bit more difficult to do that, you know, without the certain software and all of that. But, you know, all that is said, you know, if I have to make my choice, Blu-ray is the way to go. So, yeah, it seems a little puzzling.
Well, I would think that if you worked on Finding Nemo and Toy Story, you probably can't afford a Blu-ray player. But
of course,
but who knows?
Yeah.
It might have been the aesthetic. Yeah. Anyway, a pretty good closet video. I won't comment much on it. It's about 5 minutes. This one, he went to film school. Talks about his working as a projectionist and a little bit of Pixar history. One, very little bit. So I'll move on. And so there's we joked a couple weeks ago that often we get our news from people that know people that went to film festivals and heard from a guy that something's coming out. So John Waters, apparently Female Trouble is coming out in 2018 and Polyester is coming out in 2019.
That is so interesting that he's that far down the road, especially the 2019, especially that calendar, right?
Well, I think I understand Criterion-wise, they do plan these things pretty far in advance.
And they don't want to Munju, there's two in on the same day, but sometimes they do space them out intentionally like that, right?
Yeah, so I saw it in a couple places, but there was also a person in the Criterion Considered group. His name is Shaz Schick. I don't know if that's his real name. If not, that's a super cool name, if it is. He said, oh yeah, I saw him Tuesday night, and he said that, Female Trouble and Polyester. So, I believe it. Why not?
Yeah, but
have you seen those?
Female Trouble, one of those hazy memories of midnight movies of years gone by. I don't think I ever did get to Polyester. But Pink Flamingos is another. I mean, where is that in the mix there? Because that to me seems like the one that should be up on the list, unless again it's a restoration elements type of thing. But
I have a feeling there's something to that. I think that's if they could, they would put that would probably be next on the list to put out. But it's come up in conversation, but I have a feeling that there's kind of like 4 months, there's something else behind it. It was last week we talked about Sundance, and we talked about potentially Sundance titles that could come to Criterion. And of course, you know, this was Scott and Jonathan Lobinger, who both were there, and neither of them chose Wildlife, but we did notice it was picked up, and that was directed by Paul Dano, and it was picked up by IFC Films. So I'd say that's a possibility. And Paul Dano apparently is a big Criterion head. I didn't know that. So maybe this could be a fit. I don't know much about it. I know it has Carey Mulligan and Jake Gyllenhaal, and supposedly pretty good. Got a pretty good response. I don't know. Have you read much about Sundance?
No, I mean, I looked at a couple of Scott's reviews there and seen some of the social media posts, but haven't really locked into it that much. So I guess I'm just kind of learning as we go here in this one.
Okay, there you go.
But if it's IFC, it's possible.
Yeah,
that's a pretty excellent lead pairing, you know, Mulligan and Gyllenhaal. That definitely should draw some attention right there. So yeah,
it's like indie stars.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly.
They do big films, but you think of them as indie
actors, right?
With
some character development, some good intrigue there, sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. And then from one festival to another, we also have Cannes, and so Guillermo del Toro, he is the Cannes jury president, which I think is pretty awesome.
It really is. I mean, it's fascinating to watch his transformation from this culty, offbeat, you know, genre director to this kind of mainstream darling. I mean, both the Academy.
Oops.
Well, go ahead. Yeah, well, go ahead. What do you think?
I messed up. He's not Cannes, it's Venice. Cate Blanchett is Cannes.
Your link says Venice.
I'd already talked about it on another show. I'm sure
Venice
like
is still a pretty nice catch there for him. And you know, again, Shape of Water seems like it's got some pretty serious Oscar buzz going on there. Whether it wins or not remains to be seen. But, you know, he, I don't know if it's just kind of his dedication, his obsession, his perseverance in kind of making films on his own terms, but it feels like he is actually poised to take his directorial brand to kind of a newer level, a broader scale mm-hmm. level. And it's really interesting, you know, I mean, with Pacific Rim and even what's the other one? The
Hellboy?
Well, no, not Hellboy, but the Ghost one that he did last year.
I didn't like it.
Right, right. Well, to me, those seem to be sort of digging him deeper into the genre format, you know?
Right.
And even for everything I heard about The Shape of Water, which I have not yet seen, seemed like, yeah, he's just kind of, that's going to be his specialized territory. But now all of a sudden it's like, well, no, he's kind of becoming a major director on the world stage, both in Hollywood terms and in the European scene there. So, I'm overall very happy to see that and just really intrigued that his style of filmmaking seems to be getting embraced by the industry, so to speak, and that they don't just see him as a guy who kind of makes movies for the geek crowd, but you know, but that he's got a message that transcends that while not necessarily having to sell out his kind of cult film, his core audience.
Yeah, I think he's kind of managing both right now. And The Shape of Water is a very good film. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I think it will pick up some awards. It might pick up the award. We'll see. This year, it's kind of no anybody's guess. He also, but the one thing about Del Toro is he's kind of become one of the prominent tastemakers in film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think famously Tarantino was that. Maybe not anymore for Tarantino. And I'd say Edgar Wright is that right now. And actually, our friend Sean Baker, I think, is becoming that a little bit in the indie
yeah,
world.
Yeah, definitely.
But Del Toro, I think, has been. And so he put together a list for Criterion. So and we know he loves Criterion.
Well, sure.
And he called it Del Toro's Guide to the Criterion Collection. And it has Beauty and the Beast, Blood Simple. It's kind of like a top list, but with his own spin. It's not just 10 movies. It's there's some clips. There's Vampire. There's La Chienne. So it's a really great list, and little Vimeo trailer things. And actually, I didn't watch them, so I don't know if Del Toro had some involvement. But did you get a chance to look at this article?
I mean, again, these lists are, you know, Criterion's a hard one to not, you know, to go wrong with. I mean, you can almost pull 10 at random and say that's a pretty solid list. But it's definitely very intriguing and very delightful to sort of see his personal recommendations come through, and there, you know, there's definitely the Del Toro signature, whether it's, you know, fantasy, Spanish films,
Spirit of the
Beehive, supernatural elements there. By the way, Crimson Peak is the movie that we were thinking of there, so put your Facebook comments away. You don't need to correct us on that one.
You just, well, they probably already,
yeah, they're already posted by now, I'm sure,
left their comments. Keep your comments in your pocket. Room fans will get that. Anyway,
it's a good list, and definitely a nice kind of nice bunch of recommendations there.
And I like that his relationship is tighter with the collection. Shape of Water is not going to come out. I already know it's coming out on 4K Blu-ray. It's a huge picture. So, but yeah, maybe there'll be some others. Although we already have three big ones.
Oh, yeah. And just that please, sort of special edition Deluxo box set with its own unique dimensions that, you know, it's right up there with the kind of the Wes Anderson VIP all access pass that Del Toro's.
Yeah,
he's on the inside track there for sure.
Maybe he'll get that 3-year deal, and so maybe we'll be getting Crimson Peak and Hellboy and Pacific Rim on Criterion. So yeah. All right, well, I'm just going to gloss over these because it probably means nothing, but there were three new Phantom pages this week. Barbara Loden, Marcella Said, and Rebecca Miller. So these are probably Filmstruck. I think I'm not too familiar with, I think Wanda was at Loden. I didn't research these too carefully. Any thoughts on the trio?
No, we don't have much for you on that one. So.
Yeah. So we are skipping Short Takes and Filmstruck. So we are to Piece of Flair. So hurrah. What's your piece of flair, David?
My wife, she's a floral designer, and she, of course, Valentine's Day is always kind of like crunch time for her. So after that was all said and done earlier this week, she said, hey, let's go out to a movie. So she gave me the choice between Lady Bird and Murder on the Orient Express. So I said, well, okay. Murder on the Orient Express sounds like it's kind of just a fun, rollicking entertainment flick. But I said, I probably should see Lady Bird because it's an Oscar buzz and, you know, Greta Gerwig and, you know, Saoirse Ronan and all that. So let's go ahead and do the artsier flick. And so we went and saw that. And it was interesting. I mean, I liked it. I find it a very likable movie. I'm still kind of doing my own sort of internal processing about what I call nostalgia for millennials. It's like, you know, because it's kind of set in the, you know, 2002 2003. Have you seen it?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you know, it's you know, I'm kind of on the other side of the generations there. My own kids were just kind of getting into their high school years or a little bit before that. So it was very interesting little time capsule for me. I enjoyed it. I'm not sure I'm quite as rapturously moved by it as maybe others, but it's one that I'll probably ponder and live with for a little bit. Certainly want to revisit at some point. So I was favorably impressed, not bowled over, but it's doing its work on me there. So I'm just kind of, you know, putting this thing in its context there. I don't know. I'm yeah, that's kind of my very quick take on it. It's a hot take. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I read some really incredible, you know, rapturous types of reviews, and I saw a few more of them last night. So it's like, yeah, it's got me thinking there. There were times some of it is, you know, not to get again into too much of contemporary issues, but I just really feel myself feeling kind of discouraged with kind of humanity in general, if I can say so. And I just feel like people, if you could just kind of get a better grip on your kind of more dysfunctional tendencies, you know, life could go a little bit better. And I mean, in some ways I saw some of the conflicts between characters as so eminently avoidable if we could just kind of beat our neuroses down just a little bit there and get a little bit of perspective and a little bit of wisdom. But maybe that's just where I'm at in life, you know. And I also know that when I was younger and when I was Lady Bird's age, I was doing a lot of really stupid stuff. So it's all that balancing. Exactly.
I am in the same boat. And a lot of people would say the same thing about the Florida Project.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that yet?
I was incredibly impressed with that because, again, you know, I've made mention, I'm in social work, and so dealing with families that are racked in poverty and, you know, drug abuse or just other kinds of addictions and deprivations, and you know, again, it's just another social commentary. When I hear people in positions of power saying, oh, we got to help people with their mental health needs, and we got to, you know, anything to avoid talking about guns. It's like, well, show me the money. Show me the real seriousness.
Right.
And don't
don't
just pawn this off because you don't want to talk about the elephant in the room and say it's about mental health. If you're really convinced that that's the issue and that's the problem, let's have some resources to really help people out, you know. But I you know, the Florida Project, I was really incredibly impressed by that film because I know the world that he's speaking of. I'm not exactly the Orlando suburban, you know, strip mall world, but I know that realm of society. I work with those folks on a daily basis in many cases. And so, that was a very powerful film. Lady Bird is coming from a little bit more of that suburban privilege, even though this is kind of the working class aspects of that.
The suburban
exactly
lower class,
and there were some pieces that I thought were just a little bit, you know, convenient or a little bit more conventional, and the way it all wrapped up at the end there, it's like, well, life is a little bit more complicated than even all of that. But I can certainly understand the power of that film and its message for people of a certain age or life experience. I'm just kind of looking at it from a different angle there. So yeah, I was intrigued, and I think overall I think I have a pretty positive regard for the film.
Yeah, I guess I have a cold take, but I'd say I think I enjoyed it more than you. I think it's a good character piece. I think the lead, even though, you know, her troubles aside, she's very likable, and I think she played it with a lot of charisma, and you easy to relate to and fun to relate to. And I thought the mother-daughter relationship, kind of the genesis of that, was well done. And the performances too. I do agree that some things were a little pat, and I thought it was edited a little too tightly. And usually I'm in favor of shorter films, but I think I would have preferred a little room to breathe, to let scenes breathe, and not just cut at every opportunity and get that right at 90 minutes. You know,
yeah.
Another 10 minutes would have.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. Some of those turnarounds were like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, let's just kind of settle with this for a bit.
Quick.
Here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Quick. And maybe there were budget reasons. So anyway, but since we mentioned Florida Project, so I don't really have a piece of flair because, Olympics. I've just been watching Olympic films, and we just did two podcasts. But I'm actually gonna take mine outside of the movie world. This week I had a big professional deal. This week at my job, which I don't talk about on the podcast, we're a Fortune 500 company. It's a huge company, and there were 1,700 people in an auditorium. And I was selected as one of 30 or so, 25 or 30, to go to Orlando in May, just because I did a good job. I represented the company, went above and beyond. And so it was a great honor, and they announced my name. I was a complete surprise. In fact, I was a little sick, so that we weren't sure if I was going to make it to the actual event. And my boss was texting me and saying, "Hey, are you feeling well?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think I'm going to be there." And I was like, "Wow, my boss really cares for my my well-being. That's great." But he just wanted to make sure my butt was in that seat. But anyway, it was a great honor. And so in a few weeks or a couple months, early May, they'll be flying me to for 3 days, all expenses paid, at Orlando, and basically have a private park for at Disney, certain areas, lots of, you know, kind of rolling out the red carpet with other people in the company, a little bit of work, and then a lot of fun. And that I can't wait for that. It's right on the heels of a music fest that I'm going to. And in fact, I have to cut off one day of the music fest. So I'm not going to be able to see Tenacious D, and that's fine because I had to fly from Atlanta to Orlando, but I'm not complaining. This is once in a lifetime professionally. It's a big deal for
a little
me, so.
Fun in
anyway.
The sun for Aaron. Did you check the hotel accommodations? Which inn are you going to be staying at?
it's at the Disney Yacht Club, which
well,
is
good. Not the one that they had
which
the
is right.
Florida Project on. I would hope.
No, not that one. Bobby will not be my hotel manager. But if he is, I know I'll be, the pedophiles will be be steer clear. No, it's so anyway, that's a little pat on my back.
Awesome,
patting myself on the back, but it's been a big week because of that, and that actually kind of took some of my my time away from actually prepping for podcasts. So all right, well, that's the end of our little episode. And so, where can people find you online, David? If they, I'm sure.
Sure. Well,
find you.
You know, I'm on Criterion Cast. That's where I can do all my publishing, whether it's written reviews. I did the West Front 1918. That was my most recent written review. Criterion Reflections, and on Twitter, David Blakesley, and Criterion Refs. So yeah, there's links in the show notes. You know how that goes.
Everybody loves David, yeah. I think everybody knows David, too. But yeah, highly recommend you follow everything you have going on. I'm Twitter, AWest505. You can find the show on... join us in the Facebook group. That's where we're having the most fun. Of course, we have the Patreon. Please consider supporting us. We're on the Criterion Cast Master Feed, along with your show and many other great shows. So subscribe to that if you haven't already. If I'm talking to you, you probably have. And that's it. So thank you for joining me, David, for this epic day of podcasting. And I guess we'll go on with our day.
All right. Enjoy, Aaron. Take care.